Enter, if you dare.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in US of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Good, good. And in the state of, Massachusetts.
Hey, everyone, this is Dave.
Dave, how's it going?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Two of our other co-hosts, Eric and Chrissy, are unable to make it tonight. Eric got, unfortunately, sick, non-COVID-19 related. And Chrissy said she had have to take off the 2 weeks due to other commitments. So it's just the three of us or not. Maybe there's someone else, and there is. We have a special guest from Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you, sir?
I am doing well.
Excellent. Folks who don't know Barrett, he has done a number of episodes during the December month and a couple earlier in Q1 when we were down a co-host. He comes in and helps us out. And for folks who are new to this podcast, we have Dark Discussions Podcast, www.darkdiscussions.com, where you can find all our episodes. Also, you can find us wherever podcasts are found, so just search for Dark Discussions Podcast. Basically, we talk about sci-fi, horror, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, drive-in movies, things like that. Basically, talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. So we critique as well as review. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us anything you want related to genre. So if you saw a film and wanted to let folks know about it, or you wanted to give us your thoughts about a film that we reviewed, or if you just wanted to talk about some news or anything related to genre, we will read your email on the podcast. Also, you can go to our Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where we have many conversations, or you can start your own conversations. Examples of conversations today are the notification that Wonder Woman 2 will not, or Wonder Woman 84 will not be released on VOD. It will be held back until theaters are available. So there's discussion over there about that. Still, there's some discussion on Stuart Gordon and his passing and various other things, as well as Westworld and such, Westworld has been picked up for season 4 and whatnot. You can support us on Patreon. On the front page of darkdiscussions.com, there's a button to Patreon, or you can just go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. What is Patreon? Patreon is a place that you can donate to artists and help them out, such as podcasts like ourselves. To give back, for anybody who does donate, and we appreciate any money that you give us, because we are doing this for free. It is completely in the red. We make no money. So any help to pay for server fees and the RSS feed and all those other things is greatly appreciated. To give back, though, we also, for every $5 that you donate per month, you have a chance to choose one of our topics. So, for example, if you donate $15, you could choose three films, such as Take Shelter, AI Rising, or The Corpse of Anna Fritz, or you could choose The Corpse of Anna Fritz three times. And what happens is it goes into a figure hat, which is basically a spreadsheet, and then we randomly pick each quarter a film, and we do an episode on what is picked. And once your film has been added to the spreadsheet, it stays there until it gets picked. So even if you only donate once, your film will still be there and be able to be chosen. So once again, patreon.com/darkdiscussions. All right. So, for folks who are curious, since we have been doing this recently due to some requests, which is The day we are recording this is April 23rd, 2020, basically because we don't necessarily release the episode the very next week. We sometimes release it maybe a month later or whatever, depending on what we got to do. So that's that. All right. So I think we are good. Anything anybody needed to bring up before we get into our topic tonight? Anyone? All right. Sounds good. So with that, Abe, what are we going to discuss tonight?
So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are looking at the sea creature feature titled Sea Fever.
You're the scientist, I hear.
I am Jared, the skipper. This is Freya,
the real boss.
What is your work while you're on board?
I identify and extrapolate patterns from variations in deep sea behavior. I need to photograph your catch.
Yes! We're on a roll!
Something's wrong.
What is this?
How long till they eat through the bowl?
That's inside the boat. It went into the water. We're all vulnerable to get infected.
I can't see.
I want you to test all of us. Those things will spread really fast. We need to quarantine ourselves.
We're making port tonight.
But you don't understand.
Can you not hear me?
I was thinking.
That's right. Sea Fever is a 2019 technically film, but is that was festival circuit, so it was actually released on April 10th, 2020 in the USA. It's Irish, English, or I should, let me rephrase that. Irish, United Kingdom, Belgium, and Swedish production. It's a production of all four. It's completely international. A lot of the people behind the scenes were Walloon or French-Belgian folk. Half the film was done in Sweden. The other half was done in Ireland. Most of the cast is mixed internationals. The two lead women, one is English and one is Danish. So definitely a true European conglomerate film. The film is directed by Niasa Hardiman. Niasa Hardiman. That's a woman's name. It's a very uncommon name, at least in the United States. She's an Irish filmmaker, and she's had a number of credits in TV, especially such as Jessica Jones, Z, and various other shows. The film has a pretty well-known character group actors, though. One had a big leading roles back in the day, like in the early 2000s. But Connie Nielsen stars in the film along with Hermione Caulfield, Doug Rees-Scott, among others. It's basically eight characters, and that's it. Takes place on a fishing boat. That's pretty much all I have on the film, except that it's gotten pretty good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, close to high 70s, low 80s, and has been reviewed by about 20 or so places. So let's go around about how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Abe.
So this was a movie that kind of got brought a few times and kind of caught the attention of me and Phil. And last week, kind of, we pitched it as a possible topic, and it's agreed upon. Before that, it was kind of under the radar for me. It's not exactly a huge release the smaller film. So it's kind of just through a little digging, you can find out about these films and stuff like that. And I just watched it today, as I usually do to keep everything fresh, just in case there was any delays or anything like that. And I'm mixed on the film. I think the performances are fantastic. The cast really does well if they're given. I love the whole isolationism of the echoes the topic things of being trapped in a place where you're surrounded by nothing but the environment that feels like John Carpenter's a thing or Alien or stuff like that. There's a lot in that in regards where no how far you go, you feel like you cannot escape and you're trapped in this small space. The claustrophobia is pretty, and the feeling of this kind of enclosed, suffocating ship is well done. It's well lit. It kind of feels very dirty, and it kind of feels like a place that has seen a lot of work and over the years. And I do like some of the nice little bits build up in terms of getting to know the cast a little bit before things go to shit. And the idea with the creature is kind of cool too. It does kind of use some carryover of things we've seen before. But it tries to make its own thing too. It has a nice start and a pretty strong middle. I think the ending is where things kind of peter out and kind of feel a little weaker. I can see what they're trying to do there. I maybe had to do with the strains of what they had in terms for a budget, or maybe they only had an idea of what they want to do for so far. But it's a pretty good film. I think one could do worse in terms of the creature feature. I think if you really wanted a real like thing where you would get to see the creature, have a lot its presence be a lot more there. You know, if you want to see more monster, you're not really going to get it here. You get little teases of what the thing is. But it's just kind of, I think, constrained to be more or less the imagination and maybe also the limitations of what they could do with their small budget. Not a bad film. I think there's some things to talk about. It was overall a good watch. Kind of an interesting choice considering our own quarantine going on. Yeah, I'm interested in talking about it, and let's see what everyone else thinks.
All right, very good. Let's go with you, Barrett.
I heard about the film because you asked me to guest host. I hadn't heard of it up until then. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I would say the storyline was not as unique as I would have liked. There's a lot of stories like this out there. But it was very well acted and it was well directed. So it felt very tight and, but it's very subtle as well. But I enjoyed it. Worth seeing.
All right. Sounds good. For me, I heard about it through just scrolling through, Apple iTunes and it was listed, one of the 44 films that, for the horror genre that people were viewing that during that week. So that's how I heard about it. I know it's getting some buzz because I know Jason Lloyd of Horrorphilia had it as a film to view on his buddy review on his Buddy Bits podcast that he does. I hadn't heard of it otherwise except from just scrolling through, like I said. When I first finished watching the film, I really, really enjoyed it. I felt it could be a top 5 or top 10 horror film of the year. But as at, like 2 hours later, and then as I've been further and further away from it, I'm not liking it as much as I did. As Abe said, it's not unique. Alien and The Thing and things like that have been popping up in most of the reviews I've been reading about the film after watching the film. And then you're looking back and you kind of see these things, trying to see who's infected, all that type of stuff and whatnot. Also, the lead character, I'm not sure why they made her an introvert or even somewhat unempathetic person. So I would have preferred if they had that individual as someone that was more friendly and able to relate to people to get things done. But I guess they wanted more conflict on the boat. I have to say that if there is a flaw for the film, it's nothing to do with anything except for the script. The script is probably the weakest part of the film because it's not necessarily original. There's a couple of scenes that irritated me as I look back as well. But all in all, it was a pretty solid film. I enjoyed it. I'll probably put it as a top 20 horror film of the year, though it could fall off. But it's still a good film. And I would recommend it if people wanted to check out a fairly decent, I guess, nature horror type film. Let's go with you, Mike.
Well, yeah, like everybody else, except I first heard about this a week ago. Oddly enough, I had heard about Dust, which is the production company, I suppose, or the producers or distributors. I don't know how that works because one of my co-teachers had talked to me about it. And they've made a lot of, or picked up or distributed, I'm not sure how the financing works, a bunch of science fiction shorts. I'm guessing this is one of their first forays into doing feature-length films. I think they have apps on, like, Apple TV and Roku and whatnot that also stream science fiction films. So, yeah, I think you nailed it in that it's the movie itself is fine. The fundamental problem it has is that kind of like I think last week's film. What was that one called again?
Last week,
Some in the Darkness.
Yeah, that's it.
We Some in the Darkness. You know, is that it's perfectly fine, but I don't know that it does much that is really all that original either. And what really hurts this one, and you hit it, Phil, is that the two most obvious examples here are Alien and The Thing. And those are really fucking hard movies to beat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really, yep. Really hard movies to beat. And especially The Thing, right? The Thing is the most obvious comparison. Where you have a group of people together who are a little bit in some internal strife and the fear that any one of them can be infected and then they might end up bringing it back to the rest of the world. And, you know, God forbid there might actually be, you know, a pandemic and everything would have to close. And that would be a horrible, horrible thing to have to deal with. I also, it may be that, you know, watching a thing about where they're having the same debates we are right now, maybe coloring how I'm perceiving the film. Like I said, it's fine. It's not outstanding. It's just something that as I don't know if the fact that I usually like sea monster movies is hurting it or helping it, because I think the sea monster isn't very well fleshed out and you never really get a good look at it, which I, you know, kind of expect for a really low budget film. But I can also think of films like The Bay, you know, that's a lower budget film that I think, you know, directed by Barry Levinson, admittedly, that was phenomenal.
Underwater.
And another water-based film about an aquatic parasite.
Underwater.
Oh, underwater was there. There wasn't that contagion thing, though, was it?
No, I guess not.
No, but it does have the aquatic theme and the giant sea monster, where we admittedly a larger budget film that was like a $70 million film, and we got Cthulhu at the end. Spoiler warning. so
life.
Yeah.
Some people call this like Life. But on scene,
life could be another one. Yeah, I mean, if those were the films it was competing against, I think it would be easier to like it more. But man, it's like making an exorcism film. You're just going to have such a hard time coming out of the shadow of The Exorcist that everything
unless you do something different, like The Conjuring, right?
Yeah, unless you do something completely different, completely original, completely different take. And I think this was good. I liked the characters. I thought a lot of the conflict, I'm not sure, you know, it seemed kind of okay. I didn't have a problem with the female lead as she was written. But I, you know, that's kind of typical, right? It's the, oh, we're going to have the bookish scientist with all the dirt under the fingernails working folk, and let's watch the sparks fly. And, you know, and that's echoing Jaws, and, you know, you're not going to beat Quentin Hooper. And they were able to get that same dynamic with Quentin Hooper without making Hooper a dormouse. So,
right, or making Quint a total scumbag, either.
Right, and I don't want to. Right, and I like I said, I really am not trying to pick on the film, because I'm gonna try really hard not to keep bringing up these comparisons, because those are monumental comparisons but. Maybe it's because those films are I'm so intimately familiar with, immediately jump into my brain. And I can't help but make comparisons, also, but it also makes it a terribly unfair comparison to
them. Yeah, well, they're very ingrained in our, right. You know, our culture and stuff like that. You know, it's, right. Even if you haven't seen the movies themselves, most people know about the concept of Alone.
Even Dead Calm, the film reminded me of the a boat that's abandoned that they go visit and all this other stuff.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You know, so if you've seen that film. So, yeah, there was a lot of cribbing, no doubt.
One of the things I didn't like was that it didn't... There's something going on in the world that you don't know what it is. You don't get much explanation about it. And that kind of bothered me through the whole movie.
Right, right. Yeah, well, there was one scene specifically where our lead scientist is talking to the boat engineer saying that we have to release something to the sea, and the engineer saying, why the hell would we want to do that? And her reasoning was so ridiculously stupid, because two reasons. One, the creature that's in the film is a parasite, and parasites are no good for anybody.
Yeah.
And two, well, in this type, that when they, this is like a giant tick, you know, I mean, it was going to do, or mosquito, you know, what it was going to do to whales, you know. So,
well, it came out of the water, though. I mean,
and then two, it wasn't probably even part of Earth. I'm just convinced that it was an alien. It doesn't make sense. I don't buy it as a earthly creature, because but either way, we'll get into all
that. Well, and that feeds into what I was saying. We don't have enough, you're not given enough background on it,
right? Right. I mean, her comment was like, we have to release Lord King Ghidorah, you know, because he's part of the environment. And it's like, you know, it's like, oh, for Christ's sake.
Well,
anyway,
even if it's not an, I mean, that's a thing. Okay, again, this is calling back to a trope that's going back to the 50s, the scientist who's more in love with the creature than defending humanity. You know, think of the guy
in the thing from another world.
Thing from another world, right? We have to communicate with it. You know, it's a superior intelligence. We can learn from it. It's okay if we all die because it's a giant murderous vegetable.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
No. You know, and in this case, you have this thing that is a seems to be an obligate reproductive parasite, sort of like a parasitic wasps, where they, or the alien from Aliens, where they lay their eggs in you and it kills you that way. But you know, if this was a major part of an ecosystem, I imagine people would have discovered it before. And if it's so fragile that this one creature on the boat is going to make the difference between its population living or dying, it's pretty much dead already.
Right.
So really, there was no good sound reason to let this thing escape, because you could make the similar argument. Then, you know, for the well-being of this creature, we should just go back to the mainland and infect everybody.
Well, I can disagree in one respect, in that nobody might have heard of it because they're in an area they're not supposed to be in.
Right.
No, but that's only temporary.
But again, you don't have background on that. Why is, you know, Why is that the case?
Well, the area is that they just, what they do is they move the no boat zone every so often, so they won't have fishing, overfishing. So it just moves. So every 2 weeks it moves. So it's not like this area isn't traveled usually. But go on, Michael, what did you say?
Yeah, so I'm just saying it's a thing that's temporary. There still would have been people fishing there within recent memory. So, you know, I don't know. I even kind of enjoyed the approach they took in to the same concept in Deep Rising, which admittedly is now a 21-year-old movie.
Oh my god! Love that film.
Yeah. I love that film, even though the effects look like they were dated in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoy that film. That was just a more fun version of this. So it's really hard to escape the mashup things. And if you're trying to make something like this in a way that's, if you're trying to show off your talents as a filmmaker, you really should try to steer clear of being this derivative. Because it's going to be really hard to make this stand out or do something really, really different from this in terms of the gimmick. And the difference here is kind of a little bit with the characters. And again, I think the character work, I enjoy that a lot. I enjoyed the art design, the use of the ship. There are a lot of good things to recommend it, but it's going to be really hard to pull it out of the shadow of things. But with all that said, if you like those other films, you want to give this one a try, because I think while this isn't raised to their level, I think it's a pretty solid entry. You know, this is a pretty nice hit. I will also say that I don't know if you're aware of this, but Dougray Scott, it's weird because once upon a time, Dougray Scott had been cast to play Wolverine. Huh. And he had also played the villain in Mission Impossible 2.
Yep.
And because they had to do reshoots in Mission Impossible 2, they had to recast him in X-Men, and that's how Hugh Jackman ended up getting the part.
Wow.
And I just have to wonder if somewhere and there's some alternate universe in which Dougray Scott is like hosting the Grammys and Hugh Jackman is starring in independent science fiction horror films. I'm just
right.
It's just a weird thing.
It really is.
Yeah, it sure is. All right. Before we continue, we have a wiki, and I have that here. So wiki. The crew of a West of Ireland trawler, marooned at sea, struggle for their lives against a growing parasite in their water supply. And that's what it says. So that's kind of... Yeah, yeah, pretty straightforward. I mean, a trawler basically means a fishing boat marooned at sea only for the last 20 minutes of the film, really. And then struggle for their lives against growing parasite in their water supply. That's pretty correct. So, yeah, you know, it's good. It's good. It works for me. All right, so before we get into the actual film itself, I guess I'll do a quick setup and we can talk about things that are not related to spoilers, that, you know, basically the wiki pretty much explains what we pretty much were talking about prior anyway. So there's a scientist named Siobhan, or Siobhan, if you want to pronounce it.
Which is really bizarre, because I think this has been mentioned in the last two podcasts.
Yeah.
I know it was definitely mentioned in the last podcast. It may have been, I don't know if it was in this, in Dark Discussions, or maybe it was in Bullets, Brothels,
and
Bots.
Yeah, I mentioned it last week, I think it was. That's my
and so now we end up with it as our lead. That is no more planned than having a movie that starred Taylor Swift's brother.
That's true.
Except one of those two is not like the other.
And I mentioned Maeve, or Meave, I should say. And that's the name of the boat, Meave Kin Or. Meave is spelled N-E-I-M-H in Gaelic Irish. And my wife's best friend's, that's her name. So I took a photograph of the television screen and sent it over to him, and he thought it was a riot. But Yeah, so there's a lot of the Gaelic names here because it is an Irish boat. Sehoban and Niamey, which would be Siobhan and Niamh. So we have Siobhan, who is a scientist that goes onto a fishing boat, and this is oddly a factual thing, because Niamh, the woman that I know, she did the exact same job before she became a school teacher when she used to live in Ireland before she came to the States. Basically, they had put marine biologists on fishing boats to monitor the catches and try to find behavioral traits of the catches and how they group together or are in certain parts of the sea or ocean. And they keep that for environmental reasons as well as fishing reasons and all that. So she goes onto this boat, and it's owned by a man, a woman, Gerard and Freya. Gerard is Doug Gray Scott, as you said, Mike. And Freya is Connie Nielsen, and she actually does play a Danish woman in the film who just emigrated to Ireland and married this guy. And then the rest of the crew is Johnny, who is basically the fisherman, one of the two fishermen. And then Sudi is the other fisherman. And then Sierra is like the chef or cook. And then Omid is the engineer. And so there's seven people on the boat with Siobhan making the eighth. And that's pretty much the setup.
Yeah, another thing that kind of quickly draws it towards Alien and stuff like that is the number of characters. A lot of these kind of films with isolationism and some kind of creature have a crew about seven or five and stuff like that. And the Nostromo, for example, had seven. It's usually just a setup for this a small confined individuals, and not to mention a couple scientists and blue collar workers.
That's right. Yeah, and we learned a couple of things right away. Omid, who is the head engineer, is actually more well-trained than just a mechanic. But for some reason, he's doing this job temporarily or until he finds something better. Because it appears that he may actually be a white-collar professional that's just doing the important, I guess, working class job as a mechanic for the boat.
Yeah, it feels like he has the skills, but he feels like he's at a dead end because this is something he's been constantly repeating to beforehand, especially to Sudi, who obviously brings it up. It feels like he can do it, but he just either isn't motivated enough or he feels like he just can't because he's probably been working with the long because this crew is portrayed as almost like a tight-knit family, so they've been together for a while and maybe this but I there is some pressure on the character on me because he is also going to be a follow-up to B.
right, so you're absolutely right. The seven are almost like a family, which is kind of interesting and how they interact. They bring Siobhan on for the money, because it's actually a paid science visit rather than a government one, and so the agency or the company she works for is paying them. And then what happens is she takes off her hat, and they find out that she's a redhead, and I guess redheads are considered bad luck in the fishing industry, at least in Ireland. However, Gerard is told by Freya we can't get, tell her she can't come because we already have spent the money that the company has given us to have her on board. And that's pretty much the setup.
I gotta be honest, as someone who's of half Irish descent, I'm borderline offended by by the way they portray these people. I mean, I'm only saying borderline because look, there's lots of cliches about every ethnicity, and you know, I've been to enough family reunions to know the truth of the drunken Irishman. But I mean, are we still at that point? I haven't been to Ireland. I have no Irish fishermen are still bitching about the idea. I mean, about redheads being on a boat. Are they? I mean, I'm a bit amazed that they didn't complain about women being on the boat, because we know that used to be bad luck. I mean, I don't know if this is a true portrayal of working class folk in Ireland now, or is this sort of like somebody who went to art school to be a writer, and you know, they haven't actually, and this is what they think fishermen are actually like.
Well, it's an interesting cast, right? Not just cast, but also the ethnicities of the crew itself, because Gerard is Irish, and so isn't Johnny. Sierra is Irish here, but she's actually a French ancestry in real life, the older woman. Freyr is Danish, both in real life and in the movie. Omid is supposed to be Syrian originally, and Sudi is supposed to be Pakistani originally. So only three of them are actually Irish, because the lead actress, Siobhan, even though she's playing an Irish girl, is actually English in real life. So I don't know, Mike.
It's not about who's playing them, Phil. It's about how they're written. I don't care if they cast a Nubian prince to play the Irish person. They're still being written as if they're Irish.
Mike, one is Danish, and two, one is Syrian, and one is Pakistani. Right. So three of them aren't even Irish. So we have four.
Well, regardless, I'm talking because the Pakistani and the Syrian aren't the ones that are being the superstitious ones with the redhead on the boat. It's more of an issue of class than it is ethnicity, Phil. Is that it just feels weird because you know that they're writing them to be these ignorant, superstitious folk, you know, like, which, by the way, I'm sure anybody who's listening to this in Southern United States can identify with that problem. I'm sure an awful lot of people who live in the outback in Australia can identify with that. You know, anyone who has had to deal with, you know, someone coming from various areas, and certainly Africa and the Middle East and a whole bunch of places in the world that actually have, you know, modern civilization people, you know, they actually aren't spooked by the idea of cell phones and cameras that might actually capture their souls. I'm just saying I'm willing to accept the characters as they're given to me and judge the film based on that. I'm just saying it just felt really like a bizarre thing that here in a film set in 2019 or 2020, that they're like legitimately concerned about having a redhead on the boat. Not jokingly, having fun with it, not teasing the actress about it. That I get. The idea that there's legitimate bad feeling over it being a redhead.
Yeah, I mean, they actually have at one point, Johnny has to cover her hair with a hat to hide the very fact that she is. I don't know much about the culture in today to see if this is still, you know,
a culture of the whole country. It could just be a culture of fishermen in Ireland, right? I mean, we don't even know.
What I'm saying is that the family here seems to have be very tied down to the traditions and stuff like that. Freya is very has a lot of emotional attachment to stuff like so all the fable about some nymph who gave herself to the sea.
Neve of the golden hair, which is Neve. The name of the boat, which is Neve Kin Or, which means Neve of the golden hair.
Yeah, and there's also the figurehead, which is also a tradition for fishermen to watch over the sea for good passage and stuff like that. But I think that was also neatly tied to the very fact that for her, it also has a emotional attachment for both her and Gerard, because of their late daughter who passed away,
who was also named Neve as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We don't know how she passed away or anything, but you're right, because even Freya, who's Danish in the movie, her character is from Denmark. She is very superstitious too, because she is the one that freaks out when the figurehead gets damaged, and is the one that knows the big store Irish folk tale about Niamh with the golden hair. And she's also one of the folks that were somewhat concerned about the redhead as well. So yeah, you're right. So it's not just the redhead. It's a lot of superstition as well. And that's a good point that you brought those things up, Abe, because when the figurehead starts burning, she literally freaks out and has to stop it from burning. And it wasn't just because it was a fire. It was because, like you said, it was, if the figurehead burns, that's bad luck. Or gets damaged, it's bad luck. Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I don't know. It could be just for the story, you know, to make the story more, I guess, different or interesting, or maybe the fishermen in Ireland are like this. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's why I said 4-1.
Yeah, I think there's some superstitions that exist everywhere, whether, you know, it could be light belief or, you know, stronger like in this, but.
Yeah, and I was wondering if it was going to cause a lot more of a fissure between, I was going to say that it was going to cause more of a fissure between the crew and Saban, but it only does play almost as, even just a slight bit. At one point, I kept thinking they were going to, like, try to throw her off or kill her at some point because of their superstition or something like that. But it's kind of like quickly forgotten and more. So it felt like, I mean, if it wasn't even brought up at all, I don't think it would make much of a difference. It was cut from the script.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they did try to kill her, then that would make them really like backwards people, right? Like,
yeah. Because,
I mean,
right.
Yeah, that would be
crazy.
Well,
then you could start getting into like the myth territory, you know, where. there's bad luck, and so they're gonna you know, the people, the superstitious people are now gonna turn on the rational people. You know, so yeah, you could do a couple of different things with this. You know, where they may have said, oh, the way to appease the creature or get rid of the creature would be by by sacrificing the redhead.
Yeah, they didn't go that route. That would have been a disaster if they went that route. Oh my god, that would have been. And I would then definitely agree with you, Mike, that would be insulting to Irish fishermen, especially. Never mind Ireland in general.
I don't know. That could have gotten him pretty interesting.
Well, I don't think there were
several. There were several points where I kept thinking that they would have flipped and killed her at some point, because she does some pretty like drastic things later on in the film. I kept thinking they was going to push someone's buttons to try to kill her.
Well, right. By the end of the film, she kind of deserves it.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I feel that she was a sociopath, to be honest. Because she couldn't relate to a human being. Well,
you feel everybody's a sociopath, Phil.
Yeah, you do.
Well, she has some sort of behavioral health issue, if not sociopath, because she has a little empathy. She just has
disagree. She bawls at one point because of what's going on. Put her emotions on her sleeve, but I don't think she is emotionless.
I didn't say she was emotionless. I said she didn't have empathy to the other people on the boat, or she just couldn't relate to them, one or the other. Because
I don't know where you get that she can't relate to them. She just doesn't agree with them.
Right.
Well,
I don't see a whole lot of people on the boat who's got, you know, tremendous empathy with each other in some way. They all seem to be at somewhat cross purposes. She certainly has empathy, you know, when she's getting a relationship with the one guy. She feels badly that he gets sick. I don't think she's without empathy. No. She is, on the other hand.
Yeah, and she throws herself into the water to save a meat at the end, too.
Right. And she is, you know, a scientist or scientist in training. You know, and
I didn't like how she treated Sudi when he was asking questions. She goes, just leave me alone. I'm busy. And he's dying. You know, you'd think she would be kind.
She couldn't help him. She wanted to do something that was worthwhile to try and then just talk to him. She wanted to be working on the problem.
Right,
that's
right.
Where her scientist nature was coming out.
Yeah. I mean, the whole reason that she was really being pushed onto the boat was because her professor, you know, thought she was a great scientist, but she had a lot of people problems. And, I mean, the very establishing shot is her loss in her books and her work, while her coworkers are spending time with each other, friendless background and stuff like that. And that kind of antisocial behavior and awkwardness is part of the reason that causes fissure and lack of understanding between her and the crew. And that's one of the things she struggles to work with, because she tries to, the crew is very emotional and very attached to one another. Well, she's very rational and tries to be more direct on the problem. And that's where some also conflict, not just with the creature, but with each other, is very evident.
You know what? I think that scene or that part of her character, as well as, like you said, Abe, the redhead issue, they could have cut right out of the film. I didn't think it was necessary, either of them. But
yeah, I don't think they needed the redhead part of it. It definitely wasn't necessary to the plot.
Didn't add anything.
It added an antagonism between her and them, but I think they would have had that already anyway.
Yeah, they would have had it when she started getting, you know, doing as things are worse, you know.
Right. Especially because she was the outsider. She wasn't part of the family, so they would have had natural tension no matter what.
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing. When she disabled the boat, at that point, I wouldn't be surprised if someone threw her overboard.
Yeah, that point, I was like, wow.
Yeah,
someone was going to stab her or something, because everybody was just like, wow, you fucking screwed us. You literally just fucking stuck here, completely isolated in the middle of the ocean. With something stuck in our water tank.
Right. Exactly. And thousands of dollars damage, never mind, our life's in stake, and she pulls that shit, I would have been like, you're out of here.
Yeah.
All right, let's start talking about the movie, you know, and how it goes at first. But Barrett, why don't you set up the beginning, the plot and all that stuff? I kind of tested the water a little bit, but any further detail?
Well, you know, she's in the lab and she wants to work on her stuff, and they send her to the boat because they think she needs work on her personality and personal skills. She gets, you know, that feeling of superstition about her being a redhead and trying to wear the hat. She starts getting to know the crew, and she's definitely more of an introvert, or at least more focused on the science than she is on anything else. But she does kind of make a connection with one of the crew members who kind of likes her a lot. And they're making their way out to do their fishing, and it seems a little iffy, like they're going somewhere they shouldn't. You just keep getting little hints of it. And then they start seeing some, what is it, the weird lights at night? And that's
when the bioluminescence and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's when she's told the story that you were talking about
Eve with the golden hair.
Yeah, with the golden hair.
Basically that story is some... I don't know if she was human or a fairy or whatever, but Neve, this Orion person, fell in love with her, and she was off and on with them, and then she moved back to Ireland or something, and he wanted to come and visit, so she gave permission, but said you couldn't touch the land. You know, you only could be a spirit or something, but he touches the land anyway, and then he dies or something, or gets sucked back into the ocean or something. And so she sacrifices herself to the ocean, and her hair is the glowing, you know, algae and all that happens every night. But she doesn't die. She just becomes and lives in the ocean. And that's kind of that's like a quick thing.
Yeah, that was a good overview.
It sounds like who was it? Wasn't Oedipus?
Oh, for the Greek?
Yeah, the Greek myth, Orpheus, right, who goes to the underworld.
Yeah, to save his lover and stuff like that.
To save his lover, and he has to, in order to save his lover, because he's a great musician, right? And he strums a song on his lute or his lyre or whatever it is he was using, but would have been lyre probably in ancient Greece, and he sways either Hades or Persephone to release his lover to his custody, but he's warned that the catch is he's not allowed to look back at her, and if she'll be lost to him forever. And just as they're about to cross the threshold from the underworld to the real world, he can't resist himself, and he looks back, and yep. And of course she's lost forever. And that's so there that's the most popular version of that myth in that I've heard growing up, but I've heard other variations on it since then. You know, so the idea of having that thing that you want the most only to lose it because you just can't put off your gratification for an instant because of that lack of self-control.
Sodom and it's Gomorrah, nice, right?
Sodom and Gomorrah, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly what I was thinking of. And it's a nice and it works nicely as a O'Henry tale or a Twilight Zone story or the dramatic irony at the end. So.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so that's where they get the name of the boat. But anyway, you continue, Barry. Sorry to interject, explain what that was.
So we were at the point where they're going out to this area that maybe is a little iffy. You're kind of getting that feeling. And then they get a thing on the navigator where it looks like a shoal is coming right at them. It's a huge area. And all of a sudden...
Barrett, go ahead. If I could interject, because you forgot an important aspect. Right before that, they saw whales, and whales usually don't hang out in
the fishing areas. Yes,
fishing area. They move to the areas that are no travel zone because they don't like the noise of the boats, and so the other crew thinks that's a good sign that they saw the whales because. I guess that's another superstition. If you see whales, it's good luck. But Siobhan thinks it's a little bizarre, as does Freya and Gerard. And so that was the first thing. But all right, so continue.
So well, Gerard doesn't think it's weird, does he? That's where he's acting a little iffy.
Oh, right, because
he's taking them where they're not supposed to be.
Right, right. Yeah, he changed the course. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, did I miss something, or did we know that they were going onto a place they weren't supposed to be? Did I miss that?
No, they were supposed to go around.
You find out. Yeah, you find out soon after this at some point
that they were spelunking in a different cave than the one that they told the authorities.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I thought too, Mike. Right when I was watching this film. I immediately felt the same thing, descent, right, all over. You're absolutely right. But, yeah, what happens is that Freya projects a path around the no-fish zone. And when off-camera, it appears Gerard, we find out later, had changed it so it would go straight into the no-fish zone because he wanted to get a good catch, meaning no competition. Because if you... fish elsewhere, you have to split the total catch with other boats, and if he can get his own catch, they can pay off all their bills too. So that's another thing that financially
because they mentioned at some point that they were at risk of losing the boats because they were very tight on money. When he we're introduced to everybody, there's a scene where Gerard is telling Omid. Another crew member that, you know, he has to pay him back later because he doesn't have the money right now, but he said he'd make it worth a while, which is why he's so desperate and goes this course, because he wants to make sure they get guaranteed some actual results from catches Otherwise, they'll lose the boat, and can't get to the crew, and everything else like that.
Right. Omid and Omid and Sudi. They owe them extra money. Gerard does, and he promises to pay them after their trip. And to be honest, when he said it, it was kind of cheesy, but it's not that big of a deal because it's not like they're about to leave like within the next 20 minutes. So it's like the only way he could give them the money is if he pressed a button on his iPhone to transfer funds to someone else's account. So I was like, yeah, no big deal, even though they were obviously trying to set up the desperate nature of Gerard and Freya and possibly losing the boat. So they're in the no fish zone. And again, that no fish zone switches every like month or so. So they're in this no fish zone. And you said, Barrett, that this is giant.
It's like a reef that's moving towards them or something.
Yeah,
they see it on the navigator, and it's a huge red zone. And then all of a sudden, the boat rocks like it's been hit, and some weird stuff starts happening to the wood inside the hull of the boat.
Yeah, the wood starts to soften, and something's kind of oozing from it.
And then they cut through it almost to the outside, and there's some kind of organic matter there.
Right, and of course, the natural thing to do at that moment is stick your finger in the unknown. Yeah.
That part bothered me. Yes.
Especially when the scientist of all people starts doing it too. I'm like going to taste it too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, exactly.
In real life, I wouldn't necessarily surprise me. It's but because they don't know they're in a horror movie. They do. So. I can't fault them too much on that.
Right. Well, and to be honest, I can't blame the scientists any more than the fisherman, because the scientist is a scientist, but she knows no more about this than the fisherman, and the fishermen have seen everything for the past how many years they've been fishing, so you would think they would be less apt to touch it than the scientist. I felt. But either way, they're pretty much all.
At least put the gloves on, for God's sakes.
I can say I wouldn't have touched it, and I don't know that I'm in a horror movie or not, but I wouldn't have touched it.
I also wouldn't be messing around with the hull of the ship, of all things.
Yes.
Right. Well, once Omid says, then probably the most obvious explanation, which is what I would have thought if I wasn't in a horror movie or watching a horror movie, would be, it must be a chemical spill. And if it's a chemical spill and it's deteriorating wood, I wouldn't be touching it either.
Yeah, it's actually the fact that it was eating through the hull of the boat. If this, if it's just an unknown alien chemical, or some ooze from an animal, all right, that's one thing, but it's the idea it's eating through the hull of a boat, I'm going to touch it.
It's got a hell of a defense mechanism. You don't want to kill it.
Were you calling out something?
Yeah, there's that.
Put it this way, if everybody knew what I was talking about with that line, that's funny. So there's another one right there. So that's not good. And then what happens is, which is interesting, because earlier in the scene, when she gets on the boat, she talks about scuba diving, she says, you know, when you guys go scuba diving, you know, we can do this. And they go, we don't scuba dive. And she goes, what do you mean fishermen don't scuba dive? They go, no, we don't scuba dive. And that makes sense. It's because, I mean, I've never heard of a fisherman not scuba diving either. And I've never
fishermen. It's worse because somebody can't swim later on, right?
Yeah. Well, I think a couple of them can't swim. Omid and Gerard, I don't think, can swim.
Right. See,
it seems suggested that no one can swim on that boat.
Johnny could, because he wanted to go swimming.
Well, no, because they were trying to stop him.
Well, because it was insane. This is
it's nighttime. Like
30-degree
in the ocean.
It's nighttime, a moving boat, 30-degree water.
Yeah.
You know, you don't go swimming. But, you know, we're not talking cons here, you know?
Sierra's at one point says it's good that fishermen can't know how to swim because it's better to drown quickly than slowly.
Which I, again, maybe this is an Irish thing. I know fishermen, they know how to swim, the ones that I know, because they don't want to drown in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know if that, maybe this is trying to set up some excuse for them not try to make a swim for it, to get into some life jackets and try to float away.
Yeah. I mean, people, you swim, you can't swim, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a plot convenience thing, even though it never really comes up anyway, except for
the very end. Well, no, it absolutely does, at the very end of the film.
Yes.
Yeah, the very end.
It causes the final result.
That's Chekhov's swimming lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But either way, Gerard is kind of rude to her and says, because she says they look like giant barnacles after it goes through the boat and they see the inside of the creature. Gerard says, all right, well, Siobhan, then I guess you can do your scuba diving here since you said you got to do it anyway. So you might as well do it here. And when you're doing it here, you can get the barnacles off the boat.
Yeah, and she's not really interested, but she does it anyway.
Right. Well, she has to do it anyway because that was part of her job. So, whether she wanted to do it then or not, she did it. I don't know if I would have done it when something's eating through the boat.
All he gives her to do is a gutting knife.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah. Well, and even that, it's like, all right, if there's something that's doing that, I mean, you wouldn't jump in a school of jellyfish, so why would you jump in with acid-eating barnacles?
Well, and it's not just eating away at one portion of the hull. It's like several areas.
It's all over it.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like it's a small thing. It's covering the whole side of the boat.
Well, again, I think, stinging jellyfish, she's wearing a wetsuit. That's going to protect you from that.
Right.
I don't really have that much of an issue with that.
Right.
But,
well, I mean, you did have to check it out regardless. Because you have to know what's doing.
Well, and as a scientist, you'd be curious what it was, and what she finds, again, if you're not inside of a horror film, is so outside the realm of normal, right? It's right. So outside the realm of what a person would expect to find in a situation like this, that I can't really blame her.
Right.
But, yeah, it's something just beyond any comprehension. Like, it pretty much completely turns their world upside down. Because at the end of the scene is this giant she ended up seeing this giant fuck-off, like, sea creature. Almost like one of those massive deep-sea organisms that use bioluminescence to attract prey. And each of these tendrils, the things that are eating through it, are aligned with these lines of teeth, and they come to actually try to latch onto her. The situation ends up being a whole lot worse. But thankfully for her, the crew is pretty understanding that that's what it is, and they're like, except for someone saying like she's seeing things. But now the main issue is that this thing is holding on to them and they can't move.
Right. Right.
I was going to say, but even like when you said, there aren't a lot of big deep sea creatures. Most, because the nutrition down there is so pitiful, most of them are relatively small. When they catch it, they don't let it go. But in the real world, you're not finding a mega predator out in the deep ocean like that. But, so again, which is why I don't have a falter for going out and just scraping some sludge off the side of the boat.
They all kind of conclude it's actually a giant squid, which is and apparently such an animal, so very rare. And Gerard is excited about this because it means, like, hell, that'd be one heck of a catch if we get it.
Yeah, because they know how to escape from squids, and they figure they can catch it as well. Though she's not necessarily convinced that it's a squid, but it's the only thing that makes sense, because like you said, Mike, what else could it be, right? Unless it's a creature unknown, or it's an alien.
Well, no, she says, and I appreciate them. I appreciate her saying that she says it's a cnidarian, and they're all squid, you know, because she says tentacle. Cnidaria is the order, not genus. It's higher than that. Right. Might be class. But the cnidarians of jellyfish, and you know, it also includes, you know, your corals and your hydra and stuff like that. And and the things with stinging tentacles generally fall under that category. Tentacles on a squid or an octopus, vastly different. And you know, and you will get some jellyfish where the tentacles can be dozens of feet long, could really, you know, go in so many cases hundreds of feet long, you know, that if they go out far, or 100 feet long, that if they go far enough to catch food. So yeah, the idea that it might be going down in the depths and she can't see it. Yeah, jellyfish or relative of jellyfish is the thing that makes the most sense.
But she says it's gigantic and all the tentacles are connected to the one creature.
Right. This is also something way outside the experience of the fishermen. The fishermen know squid. And they hear tentacle, they know squid, so they squid. That's what they jump to.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense. So they send like the trawler or something, whatever it is, down there to try to pick this squid up.
And well, let's be clear. She says she'll never go back down in there either.
Yeah.
I want to be clear on that, because she's very adamant. I'm not going back down there. Right. That thing is big and scary. Right.
Well, and they don't disagree with her. I mean, even if it's a giant squid or something that could hurt you, you're not going to go down there again anyway. And they kind of don't fight her when she says she's not going down there again. If anything, that the way she said it was more to scare the audience, I think, than anybody. Because I think they played like the music and all that when she said, "I ain't going back down there again." You know, so let's see. So let's talk about what happened. So they try to move it. They can't move it or pull it up, but it knocks.
Yeah, they're using their winch, right?
Yeah, the winch. That's it. The winch. Yeah, and it knocks it off the boat, but Johnny cuts his hand because he almost loses his hand in the winch. And so they're free of the creature. And then I forget what happens, but eventually the creature comes back and hooks onto the boat again. What it does is they're looking for another winch. And then they see the Portuguese boat, right?
Yep. Yep.
And so they want to go and try to see if they can use their winch or something.
Yes.
They want to get help, basically.
Get help. Yeah,
they're going over there to get help.
Right. Right.
And Siobhan volunteers, and then Gerard goes with her.
And Johnny does too.
Yep.
Oh yeah, Johnny too.
Yeah. So when they get over there, it's the Santa Maria boat, and so immediately I knew it was Portuguese, the way it was spelled and all that, and then there was a bunch of signs like emergency and all this, and fire extinguisher. Yeah, and it was all in Portuguese. It was all Portuguese language. So it was a Portuguese boat. Makes sense, because they're not too far from that area either, and no one's on board. At least that's what it appears to be.
Until they go down.
Until they find a body.
Just a body, several bodies.
Yeah.
There's one body.
Well, actually, they're all together.
There, it basically looks like a mass suicide, but one with a knife. But one body has his eyes missing, which he could not explain. Aside from Draw, who offhandedly says it might have been the birds.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That. Yeah. It looked like the death of the school teacher and the birds. The eyes pecked out.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of comes into another shout out to those kind of films we mentioned way back earlier, the derelict base or ship that already has already encountered the aforementioned creature.
Right. Like Deadcom, where the boat, dead people and all that other stuff abandoned and whatever.
Or the Swede base in The Thing.
Yep.
Yeah. you mean the Norwegians? The Norwegians.
No, they're Swedes.
Hey, Sweden, Norwegians, Mac.
But this really kind of brings up more of secrecy and distrust when Gerard, not wanting the rest of the crew to be frightened, tells Johnny and someone to be quiet about what they found.
Yeah, don't right. tell anybody.
Yeah, that kind of was weird, and I was shocked that Siobhan went with it. Because and they don't report it either. But, well, first of all, we know why they don't report it, because Gerard, we find out later, has brought them into the no fish zone. And the Portuguese boat must have been doing the same thing, trying to do illegal fishing, you know, just as Gerard was going to do. And that's why they got probably attacked, too. And then it was just... Basically, they just say, yeah, they won't help us, or they can't help us. They don't have what we need, or a radio that's big enough, or something like that. And pretty much everybody on the boat just goes with it. So, all right. And then Johnny and Javon don't tell anybody what they find, or even say, you know what, we got to call International Coast Guard, whether it's Iceland or Portugal or France or whatever, to let them know that there's a boat here with all dead people, you know.
Yeah.
Gerard tries to say, it's terrible, but again, it was sea fever. They went crazy. It wasn't, you know. But
title drop.
What's that?
Title drop.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think of that. But you were gonna say something.
Yeah, it was also just. It was weird. I kind of understood Johnny being quiet because, you know, he doesn't want his folks being, or the folks on the boat being frightened, and he's, you know, he's worked with them for a while. But Siobhan has, throughout the rest of the film, has shown to be so defiant that I was surprised she didn't say anything. So things have gotten much worse.
Right. Yeah, I feel that way too. Well, what about you, Mike? What did you think of that whole scene, the Portuguese boat scene and the cover up?
Well, seen it before. That was the main thing I was thinking. yeah. You know, and boy, this really should be setting up red flags. And I don't, that was a moment of implausibility I found, because I don't think they were alarmed enough at what they found.
Oh yeah,
I agree.
And I also don't understand why then when they did get back to the boat, they didn't actually, you know, say back to the Maeve. They didn't do anything. They played it cool. They like pretended that they didn't find a boat full of dead bodies until they were like pressed on it.
Right. And I found actually, that Neve, not Maeve.
Whatever. I found it a very strange way to respond to that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, because even being fishermen out there all the time, I'm sure, you know, even if they've been doing it for 30 years, I bet you know, they've never found a boat where everybody was dead. So the way that everybody just was nonchalant about it, that knew about it, and then when everybody else finds out about it, that was weak.
And even if it was something, then there would have been, so what'd you find? Another boat where they're all dead again. Really? That sucks. You know, that's... Either it is a thing that they need to hide, in which case they really needed to be a little bit more creeped out about it, or it's a thing that they would have shared with the crew.
And I could just see two people keeping the secret, but there were three.
Yeah.
Right. And one was an outsider.
Who's shown to be very resistant to instructions when she's more direct about having results in truth.
Right.
You know, because she's always been trying to address what's wrong, and she's always out doing the right thing that would be by procedure and stuff like that. And that was kind of weird to me because, as I said, from that point on, and whenever somebody in the crew says, "Don't do this," she's like, "I'm doing it."
Right.
And I actually found her a little bit incurious about, as someone who is new to going out on the ocean. First time out, you find a boat with a bunch of dead people on it, and as a scientist, now admittedly, they all killed themselves. You know, so you know, you're not going to think, well, it must be a weird parasite that caused spontaneous suicide. I'd still want to, you know, a science person tends to be inquisitive. They don't like unsolved answers, and I understand that maybe human behavior is not her area of specialty. But you would want to try to learn more, or at least express frustration and curiosity as to what happened. And then maybe that opens up that conversation and, you know, well, what the hell are you talking about? Sea fever. And and then you get into that. Well, have you ever seen this before? Well, no, but I've heard the tales. You know, I just don't.
Well, just,
you know, maybe and had just a redhead on board. I don't know. What's the.
And just the fact of the humanity of the people that are dead and the humanity of the people who find the dead. And it's not natural causes, or at least, you know, in old age, you would think there would be like some sort of shock or fear or depression or something.
It's also that Saban, beforehand, she was very eager to try to find some way to get solve the situation, being stuck. And, you know, they find out that the other crew's dead and their communication's cut off. She was shown to be a little more pants, and it sounded like she's just as cool as Gerard and Johnny are about it. And it felt kind of inconsistent with how she was up to that point beforehand. You know, and she kind of flips off. It was just kind of weird. And I don't know. It just didn't feel very consistent with how she portrays herself in the rest of the film.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, obviously, you know, she's an outsider and whatnot. So, you know, she's not going to necessarily, I mean, you're right, though, because, again, we're talking about a mass death, murder or suicide or something, and she just bottles up, you know, and doesn't even talk about it. And then the next scene, she's acting normal again, like everybody else that saw the corpses, you know.
And like, okay, I won't say anything.
It was a case of, it was like two people on board who knew that they were in the wrong place, and that calling alerting the authorities would get them in trouble, and so that's why they downplayed it to the rest of the ship. I get it, but we know that wasn't the case. Not everybody that was on board knew that they were where they weren't supposed to be.
Only one person knew at this point, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
After that, you know, Johnny's like, you know, just put it in your mind. You know, I've seen worse. And I'm thinking, like, really? You see something worse?
I want to know what he saw that was worse.
A mass suicide with one guy's eyes missing.
Yeah, unless he was in Iraq, you know, during a war or something. I don't see how you seen worse than this.
Well, and he's making it sound like he saw worse out on the water, you know, in the fishing industry. So,
yeah. I saw a man decapitated by a hermit crab. It was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, I mean, even if he had seen a boating accident or a mechanical machinery accident, that's still, and that's bad. But again, we're talking murder, eyes ripped out. I mean,
A whole crew, possibly.
I mean, that's just. You didn't see worse than that. You just can't.
Well, and isn't it kind of violating the laws of the maritime laws by not like trying to call that in or anything? Or
oh yeah, but he didn't do that because he didn't want to get in trouble.
Well, and I know, but the other people would have questioned that more, don't you think? That were.
but you know what? That's right. You remember the radio broke earlier.
Oh, that's why they were trying to get there to get a radio. That's right.
Yeah, because when the creature hit, the boat was shuttered, and the radio went flying and crashed. Typical thing that you would see in a horror film. But again, you have to get rid of the radio, just like you have to get rid of cell phones.
Yeah, right. Break up communication.
Right. Yeah, no one had cell phones. That was interesting. Yeah, didn't even try that.
Wait, someone had a cell phone because they tried to use the UV ray trick.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so maybe the cell phones just don't work, and they didn't bother telling us that cell phones don't work out in the ocean, or they just assumed we would think that. But you're right; they did have cell phones. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Well, cell phones are you're gonna have a bitch of a time getting a cell phone to work. I imagine way out there. It's not like there's gonna be a cell tower. Exactly. By the way, I do want to say I'm so glad that the UV trick. Didn't work. I can't imagine how it would. It's a purple light, not a UV light. Right. I mean, I might be completely wrong about the physics of this, and you know, just like if you know something about the superstitious nature of Irish fishermen, if I am completely out on a limb here, then and I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about, then please kindly correct me. But I can't imagine putting a piece of tape over a regular flashlight and coloring it with a purple Sharpie, which, by the way, nice that they had that in stock, would turn it into an ultraviolet light as opposed to just a light that's purple. You know, there's a huge difference there.
Huge.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, if you had a true UV light, technically you would think it would work because, I mean, that they actually announced in a press conference today at the White House that UV light will kill the virus, the COVID virus. So, you know,
that would explain why people who are getting it are all getting it indoors and not a lot of people getting it outdoors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there was questions about parks and stuff, children on parks, and then they start talking about the sun and UV light. But first of all, it's just a purple light. It's not really a UV light. And then second, this isn't a virus or bacteria either. So, I mean, it could be just like humans. Like, we could have a purple light shined on us and nothing's going to happen. So why would it happen on this creature?
Right.
Yeah. Well, purple light!
Well, and at this point, it's not the parasites anymore, right? When they're trying to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like giant sperms or tadpoles.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's what they look like at first when she was in the water. The tentacles, they looked to me like they were just massive sperm hanging on the bar. This giant glow in the dark sperm, you know, because I didn't see the tendrils going all the way down. It just because they just kind of taper off.
Yeah, I guess Neptune had a little too much fun last night.
Right. But what we figure out later is that this creature uses its tentacles most likely on whales, and it infects whales, and the boat just happened to be near the whales, and so it being stupid, assuming it's not an intelligent creature, assumed the boat was a whale, and that's how it got there. But
we haven't even gotten to our first death yet.
Yeah.
All right, so let's start talking about it. So Johnny starts acting strange.
Yes. So during a dinner scene, just like in another film, one of the crew members who hasn't been feeling good starts acting funny, which is Johnny. And he wants to suddenly go for a swim, even though it's pitch black outside and probably doesn't know how to swim too well, or if he does, whatever, but it's fucking cold out. The crew has to rush out and stop him, and they manage to pull him back into the cabin and tell him to sit down and just calm himself. They first think it's drugs and something, and then he goes trying to drink some water because he's overheating, has a fever, as they find out.
Would it be a
earlier
sea fever?
And Yes, sea fever. One hell of a sea fever as he starts to convulse, and then he suddenly loses sight, complete sight. He goes blind, and he starts screaming and freaking out, and then his both eyes just fucking pop. They pop like fucking cherry tomatoes, and he just loses a huge amount of blood, hemorrhages on the floor, and he just dies within seconds of it happening. And that blood, most of that gore, goes down the sink. At the very same time as another crew member, Sudi is taking a shower, because all that water they're drinking from and using the shower is within a tank that they share for their daily uses, and shit starts going south from there.
Well, this is one question I have. So they talk about how it could get in cuts and everything, and I don't understand where it's coming from, I guess. Is it on the rope? Or is it, you know, what did he touch that got into his cut?
Well, because I think it was the rope that had some of the bacteria, the slime on it, and he got his thin hand caught inside.
And that was kind of the assumption I was making, but...
Yeah, it wasn't exactly clear, but that's why I got from, because there's a number of shots out the film where they're tracking bits of that bacteria around on their boots.
Yeah, the green goo. The green goo.
Yeah, the Smurf blood and shit like that. And it's all over, it's getting their boots, it's on the ship, it's on the ropes, it's on the chains, it's all over the place. So I guess it's supposed to suggest that because how they have all the cuts and stuff like that, it's how it can get inside their bodies.
Right, yeah. So basically, that's when she figures out to look at it under the microscope, the green goo, and that's when she finds out that it has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of the little sperms. And the thing is if you have a cut and you touch the green goo has all these live little creatures in it. It gets into your body. So, you know, similar to kind of the COVID virus where you can't see here, at least you see the goo, but either way, the same principle, which is if you get the parasite or virus on you and it gets into a mucous membrane, you're infected. And that's what happens here. His hand becomes a mucous membrane because if you drink the water, you know, there it goes. It's in your mucous membrane, you know?
Yeah. Well, these things are not just little sperms and little like organisms. These things are fucking voracious because as it gets into the water system, while Steve is taking a shower, a couple of them follow him and chew their way into his skin.
Right.
These things turned out to be fucking not just, they're fucking like mega piranhas, sperm piranhas, because they're actually chewing through the steel filters. They're chewing through the steel filters and everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so basically, it gets into Johnny. Johnny dies, his eyes blow up. They saw something in his eyes move, but they don't think much about it. And then his eyes blow up.
Chekhov's exploding eyes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, right. We see the Portuguese guy, his eyes gone, and now we know how that happened.
Remnants of the space jockey with the exploded chest.
Yes.
Yes, yep. There you go. Exactly. And then all the parasites pop out of his eye sockets into the sink, and they go down the drain. And since this water is recycled or something, it gets into the fresh water, and then now these little creatures are the size of like dimes. They fall out of the drain and get into Sudi when he's taking a shower or something.
Yep.
Yeah, and then he immediately gets a fever, and they have to put him to bed.
No, he doesn't have a fever. That was the thing that distinguished him from the other guy, remember?
Well, he had to get bedridden, though, right?
But it was because he was, like, cut up and he was bleeding from a lot of spots. But he didn't have a fever, because they specifically talk about that. Okay. Him not having the fever, whereas the other guy did.
Yeah, well, I guess because they said that like an incubation time of, like, 30-something hours.
Right. Right. Yeah, because that's how long they think it took Johnny to die, was from being infected when his hand was cut to 30 hours later when his eyes blew out.
Right, and maybe it's suggesting that it depends on the where you get infected, because I imagine maybe the parasites had to travel from the hand wound upwards.
Right, right. So Saeed, you know, I'm sorry, Sudi, you know he's gone, or he's going to die. All right, so what do you want to talk about now? So basically, Ciara, the older woman, like the cook, she actually probably gets infected when she's trying to comfort Sudi, is my guess.
It's very possible, but it must have been such a small little dosage, because it isn't until like near the end of the film where she starts going crazy.
Right, that's true. And also, when they do the eye test, which is like the blood test and the thing, or the tooth test and the thing prequel.
Again, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. She passes, but when everybody passes, but Siobhan doesn't bother doing Gerard, and she goes, because I already know, and I still don't know how she knew.
Yeah, they don't really explain that.
No, they don't. It wasn't very clear at all. They never did explain that. And with Sierra, it was a very weird moment, because it was so different from the other victims. Because she's at one point, after the Gerard comes clean, what the secret he was keeping from everybody, Sierra seems to be apologizing to Siobhan about lashing out at her about everything, and then she tries to strangle her.
Yeah.
And starts chasing her up the fucking ladder, shrieking at her. And it was just like, what the fuck is going on here? It was just so, it was very strange. And I wasn't sure if this was some kind of, something different, what was supposed to be like just sea fever, but then she
finally. I think that was linked to the superstitious fear of the redhead thing. And she thought maybe if she got rid of her, the curse would end.
That's the feeling
I got from that. It wasn't very well played out.
My feeling was that all I could think of was the sea fever, because it was very weird.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And I thought she just snapped. But then after she falls and breaks her neck, we see one little parasite come out of her eye, and I was like, which was weird, because it was just one tiny little one that Omega was able to step on, and I was just like. It was confusing. It was just really weird.
Maybe because they hadn't finished that part of their full life cycle. So that one of them was ready and came out and the others weren't. I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah, this is part of my issue is I don't think they fleshed out, or if they did, they didn't clue us in enough. I don't think they fleshed out the creature well, and I think some of the rules were inconsistent.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the eye test, I found a little spotty, because, you know, you're shining the light into someone's eyes, but you shine the light in someone's eyes, their pupils are going to contract. It's going to be really hard to see what's behind there. And obviously we see from this, it is not foolproof. But again, having somebody voice that concern, or saying that it's, you know, that's, you know, it might not work because it's really hard to see.
And the fact that, as you bring it up, Mike, and the fact that Sierra was infected the entire time also brings inconsistencies and questions about whether or not Freya were infected or not, because they could have missed what was behind there too.
Well, right. You had the change in. Change in behavior, the fever, these are all things that, you know, we didn't see in other people that were infected.
Right.
Right.
Who's
the first guy who died?
Johnny.
So when Johnny dies, he's acting like he's drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Before nobody else acts like they're drunk. You know, the one has a fever, the other one does. It's
inconsistent. Yeah.
It's inconsistent. And one of the things, and I've mentioned this many times on the podcast before, one of the things that works in horror films is having rules. And it's important that you have rules for the audience to follow because it gives them some suspense. You can break the rules if you want, but you damn well better have a good reason. Here, they give you a rule and then kind of immediately discard it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, because after we go from Johnny, we go to Sudi, who's suddenly being eaten from the inside out. He's getting all these open wounds on him. His eyes don't explode. He goes blind, but his eyes don't burst. And nothing comes
right, right.
And then Sierra. Then we get Sierra, who doesn't show any fever or anything like that. And she has only one single little parasite that leaves her eye. And so...
Yeah, she never went blind, and she goes insane instead.
Yeah.
Right.
And quite frankly, the exploding eyes is such a good gimmick.
Yeah, you think they would have just kept going with it.
I would have used
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like when Sudi says, "I'm blind," and then he passes away in front, and Sierra's holding him. You would have expected his eyes to blow up and then the blood goes all over her face or something. That was a good horror opportunity that they dropped. And then now the stuff is now in the blood that's on her face. So you figure she's going to be infected, but they don't go that way, which was unfortunate, I felt.
Yeah. And it's also like, and I feel that towards the end, I felt like they were adding all kinds of different rules and shit like that. Like the parasites that eat, they try to eat each other until there's only one left. So that's what explain, you know, until one grows into be an adult. But they don't. But the thing is, like, is that only when they're why doesn't that happen when they were inside Johnny or inside Sudi or Sierra? And what that happens to Sierra and all kinds of shit like there.
I don't mind that happening when they're outside of the host body. You know, when there's no other food around, I'm kind of fine with learning more about it as you go along. But again, even just having characters, especially with one of the characters as a scientist, having her voice some of these questions or comment on it would help give the sense that the writers have this figured out.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think this is part of my issue with the creature in general, is that it felt like the rules were changing or being made up on the fly. You know, like when I'm watching Alien, or Aliens, not to keep going back to that, I have a feeling that they know what the creature is. The creators,
yeah. You
know, they know what the creature is from the beginning. The crew's finding out little bits and pieces of it as we go along, but the filmmakers know what that is. You know,
yeah.
Tremors, they know what the creature is, and they set up clear, because, you know, precise rules for how that creature behaves.
And
you know, there's all
exactly. Because it's like, don't make any vibrations, because the creatures don't have eyes. Did he feel the world around them, kind of the little shakes and movements? And they can only dig through like earth, but they can't go through like heavy like brick walls and stone, because that will kill them. So there are clear rules of how they can deal with them and how they can exploit them.
Or think back to Jurassic Park, right, where a pivotal moment in the final act is the Velociraptors opening the door to the kitchen.
All right, yeah.
That is Chekhov's open door, right? They see that in the beginning of the film, talking about the intelligence of the raptors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that when it happens later, it's not, oh really? And now these things are know how to open a door too? No, they give you information so that you're aware these things are freaking smart.
Yeah. And
here again, there seems to be some inconsistency to how the creature is behaving, and yeah, I'm perfectly willing to get that. You know, as we're seeing with the coronavirus, that people's bodies can react to parasites differently depending on how they enter the body. But I don't know that there's and where they enter the body. You know, the difference between bubonic plague and pneumonic plague, you know, is more or less how, you know, where the infection occurs. And but can we, you know, can we make that a little bit of stronger connection for the audience on a first time go through? And again, have they thought it through well enough?
Yeah. I mean, if we go to The Thing, I know we're going back to these films a lot, but there were concise rules about how infections spread. One way was that the creature had a potential host alone and assimilated them completely, so they looked and sounded just like the person or animal they had taken over. Another way is the creature gets some of its own DNA inside you, like it, when the polymer creature tries to kill Maul's windows, and he starts to turn. And there's even a moment where Fuchs mentions that even a small little bit of this creature can take over an entire host, which is why they would try to eat from canned foods. And they use these rules in some way or another to try to give it concise of how it takes over. And here, the creature, just a little bit of it can get inside you and start infecting you, but the consistency of how the results of the infection play out don't really add up, especially because I understand how it would take a while maybe for the virus to take over a young man like Johnny, who's, you know, able-bodied, stuff like that, but then suddenly it takes longer for it to start wearing down Sierra, who's much elderly. She's the eldest of the entire crew. So it's a slow little place in terms of what the lore of the creature is.
Right, right. All right, so let's see, where do we want to go now? I guess we can talk about the chaos at the end. Basically, the water system is filled with them. It's in their water tank at the bottom of the boat. They don't know how to kill it. They're trying to think of maybe disinfectant and the UV, and then they decide to do electrocute the boat, and they would all wear rubber boots.
Shoes. Yeah.
And right. And so they electrocute the boat. It starts a fire on the man. What's that thing in the front again?
The figurehead.
Yeah, the figurehead. And so there's the more superstition, bad luck. It sets on fire and they have to put it out. And the electricity doesn't kill it either. And then we find out that they're saying, all right, well, maybe we can, a boat's going to come sooner or later because of where we're located. And then that's when Gerard mentions that we're in the no fish zone, so that we're not going to see any boats. And, so they're pissed at him. And then Siobhan says we can't go in for 30 hours, because that's how long it was the gestation for Johnny to die from infection to death. But they're all saying we want to go in because Sudi at this point is still alive, and they say we got to get him to a hospital. Never mind the fact that we all want to get the hell off the boat. And Siobhan keeps on saying we can't because we're going to bring the infection to the mainland. And see, this is another inconsistency, Mike, you being a biology teacher. If it's a normal parasite, like a lamprey or something like that, it's not going to make it outside. You can go to the mainland and it just, it's just a fish. But she is inconsistent, Siobhan, because at this point she's saying we can't bring it back to the mainland because it's going to infect everybody and everybody's going to, who knows what will happen, meaning people walking down the street and all this other stuff. Yet later she says it's part of nature and we should let it free. And it doesn't make any sense. It was like so inconsistent, I felt. What did you think?
Well, not only that, but again, logically speaking, coming from a scientist's perspective, she should know that, right? Is that we do have quarantine procedures, that the right. Smart thing is to get everybody on the boat. The things are in the water, sharks in the water, boats in the water. You don't go in the water, and you'll be okay.
Right.
Don't touch any goo.
Right.
They said we're 30 hours away from getting to the mainland. You can survive without water for 30 hours. I can't imagine that they not have any bottled beverages on the boat. They didn't bring Gatorade, or something. I mean, forget. I mean,
even bottled water. Sometimes they would have that. I would think.
Oh yeah.
Well, if there was ever an issue with water, they'd need water.
Right.
Right. Well, they mentioned having the water purification thing, although it was for desalination. It's not necessarily going to work for an infection. But all you need is a couple of bottles. Right. A couple of bottles of Snapple, and you're good.
Yeah, right. So, you're going to have Coca-Cola on board.
Right. So I'm not sure. So they could survive for 30 hours. Even if they had nothing to drink, they could survive for 30 hours. Right.
And they're also in a part of the ocean that is far enough away from Ireland and Iceland and various other places because, I mean, they land up and they meet a Portuguese boat. And Portugal and Ireland, that's like... Nova Scotia to Virginia. So it's not really that close. So it's going to take a certain amount of hours to get back anyway. So like you said, when they get back, there's going to be some sort of quarantine.
They get back, say, hey, don't come on the boat. We've got a sick person here. You know, I understand the radio is shut, so they can't radio ahead.
Yeah.
But we've got an infection on the boat. We've got a sick person here who's going to be dead by before they get there anyway. But they don't know that at the time. We need to be put in quarantine. We need to have our blood checked, our eyeballs scanned, whatever. And then, they can share the details of this. And given how quickly Johnny died, if they're all infected, they ain't going to survive before they get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And since they had done no cleanup or tried to keep anything away from them up to that point, it was too late anyway.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I liked your point too, Barrett. I mean, just common sense that they would have bottled water. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense that they wrote that completely out of the.
Well, I understand that they had the thing on board to purify the water so they'd have water to drink.
But there's always a chance it could break, so you would always have
it. Gotta have water.
All you need is two jugs of water, two gallon bottles.
Or coffee, something, yeah.
Yeah. It's a
what about the rafts? Don't those have kits with, water in them?
Yeah,
what are you going to do if you're, out on that raft? You got nothing?
Yeah,
that's a good point, too. Yeah. Yeah, so that was a little bizarre. Yeah.
But, they never made a point, though, of them potentially running out of water, right? It's just a matter of stay away from the fucking water and you'll be fine.
Right.
And this is part of where you sometimes have a problem of we make the creature a little bit too powerful.
Right.
There's nothing it doesn't see, other than the fact that it doesn't seem to be intelligent. There's nothing it can't do.
Right.
Which kind of reminds me of how with life. Being super powerful, being intelligent, and nothing the characters do seems to stop it. This is the point where the creature is so overpowered that any action seen is futile.
Right. Yeah, and this one here also has the acid for blood.
Right.
So, it's just what you're going to do. Yeah. Well, and I just didn't think at that point when people are dying left and right and she's doing that thing like the professor from The Thing from Another World, which is it's a life form. It's important. It's like, what are you talking about?
Well, and which made me laugh a little bit because towards the end, Saban does the same thing when Omid suggests they kill it.
That's what I'm talking about. It's like, that made no sense that she was talking that way.
I was like, really? Are you going to fucking pull ash at the end of this?
Right. I was expecting her head to fall off and milk squirting out of her neck. For Christ's sake. You're right. She's ash. That's all she is.
And I want to be clear, because we've had this issue come up before. I know it's a film. It's a movie.
Right.
I'm aware of that. But the film should try to be as intelligent as the audience is here. And I can understand that, sort of like, you know, if, you know, Eric seeing computer shit, or Eric's roommate Dan with legal shit, and it bugs him because it's shit too. Or and Barrett and computer and film about computer shit. And I get that. For me, I was a marine bio major. But I don't think there's anything in this film that is like so far like that is just so weirdly esoteric, like quarantine procedures. And I'm talking about quarantine procedures from before March, and we were living it. You know, that we couldn't, that the average person could just say, well, why the fuck don't they just tell the people in the hospital? You know, just don't be the schmuck who gets bitten by the zombie and not tell everybody. We've all been here. It's not, you know, we shouldn't be asking these questions without them providing the answers to it. And they should trust the audience will be smart enough to think of these things. And when they write it, they should be smart enough to think of these things. And I'm also willing to concede, because I've only watched this the once, I might have missed something here. You know, that sometimes happens. There are movies that I've watched, I had questions, and I rewatched, and I went, oh, wait, nope, they mentioned it here. They mentioned it there. And sometimes you miss it. You're engrossed in the sort of the broader scope the first time you watch it. You miss some of the details. I get it. And again, if we have missed something, please come back and explain to us what we missed. I'm more than happy to hear that. You can always just email us at darkdiscussions@AOL.com. But yeah, I mean, this is not something weird. This is not some weird shit. This is basic medical knowledge.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, is that if someone, say, for example, my wife saw this film, she didn't watch it with me, but if she saw it, maybe it would be interesting and enjoyable to her more than, say, the regular horror fans. Because obviously, all of us, we've seen Alien, we've seen The Thing, we've seen Life, we've seen Deadcom, we've seen The Thing from Another World, and, you know, on and on and on. So all this stuff is like things that we would have said a smarter movie like Alien would explain that stuff, you know. So maybe it's because we're looking at it as a veteran horror film fan or veteran science fiction film fan versus, say, the layperson would if they were watching the film.
Right. Well, even then, like, you know, even in Alien, right, you have, for me, the one bullshit moment at the end of we have a crew of 12 people in a boat that only fits 3 people. What?
Right. Right.
There was a bullshit moment in that film.
Yeah.
Unless there were multiple pods.
Right. Unless there were multiple, but then they should have mentioned that there were multiple ones and we lost some.
Yes.
But that is kind of bullshit moment, or yeah, or because they've already talked about the company, right? You could say that it's a it was good. They were cheap bastards.
You'd think they'd protest at that though.
there's any number of there are ways to have handled that and addressed it, but at that point in the film, you know what you're watching is so good and so engrossing, you kind of sort of let it slide. It's not going to ruin the movie for you, or it shouldn't. And here, what's here is just too familiar. It's not. It is decent, but it's not so engrossing that I can just turn my brain off completely and accept everything that goes on.
I have to say, it's helped by the good acting and the good filming, because otherwise, I would have focused more on some of that stuff.
Right,
it was
and like
more of a filmed movie, then I would have been like, what?
right. Oh, no, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the acting was fantastic. I mean, Connie Nielsen and Doug Ray Scott are veteran actors and actresses, and same with Owen Fleury, who played Sierra, and all the others were great too, including Siobhan, the actress that played Siobhan, and Johnny Omid and Sudi. So, I mean, the acting's great. The filmography, the cinematography, the direction, all of it's great. It's just that it's the script.
Yeah.
It has some major issues with it. And again, when I was watching the film, I wasn't as noticing it as I guess maybe you, Mike. But
Well, some of it's I'm thinking about it afterwards.
Yeah.
And I've talked about that with, like, as Hitchcock had it, the ham sandwich theory, which is, you know, that it may be bad for you afterwards, but if you're enjoying it while you're reading it, who really cares? And yeah. You know, but certainly things like I liked the line, and I wrote it down, where she talks about the red crabs on Christmas Island. And how the red crabs on Christmas Island all died because of the yellow ant that made it to the island. Again, you know, it was an invasive species. It only took the right. You know, that one species. It just took a couple of those ants to wipe out the red crabs. And, you know, and she says something. So, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? And she says, yeah, the crab should have gone to the fucking hospital.
Yeah. Right. Well,
I'm like, thank you. That's it. That's why that is a terrible, terrible. Yeah, this is the, you know, the we can't let the dinosaurs on the mainland. We can't let the aliens reach Earth. All of the, you know, we've, again, it's a thing we've seen before. It's a common trope, and I don't mind that common trope. Dinosaur gets to the mainland, one RPG brings it down. I don't give a shit. Still gives you a sort of a ticking clock or a time bomb thing to work with into the story. I can buy that. I get the whole thing, but there it's like, yeah, why not just go into fucking quarantine? It's not going to happen. But anyway,
right.
And having the character say it though, and she has no good rant. She doesn't have a good response to it.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that's funny about Siobhan is that she has, quote unquote, all these great ideas.
Well, she's young, though. I mean, so that's part of it. It's that inexperience.
Well, that's fair too. But it's like she wants to do this, and this. And I mean, and she's kind of right, but she's not trying to. It's almost like political headbanging because there's two sides and there's no agreeing in the middle. And there was no reason they couldn't agree in the middle. And instead she sabotages the boat. Yeah. And at that point, she's an enemy, in my opinion. And then right. When she says, oh, we should save the creature. It's like, what?
Exactly. It didn't really go anywhere. I thought it was going to, like, to leave some weird, like, last minute conflict between Omid and her. And I was like, whoa, this is going to go fucking south.
Right.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like, I get there was some antagonism there or some alienation or maybe whatever, however you want to refer to it, but the relationship seemed to have been warming.
Right, yeah, because she was rude to him when she first got on the boat. She goes, why are you working here? This is way under your level. And it was like almost insulting. And you know, again, it could be because she's just has no personality.
She's not good with people. Yeah, she's not good with people.
No people skills.
Right, no people skills. But
and she does try to apologize for that right away. I don't really mean that, but...
Right.
But nobody ever sits down and says, hey, let's... Remember, there's 30 hours before, or they mentioned, right, before they end up back at the mainland. She wants them to self-quarantine for 36 hours.
Right.
If I remember the timeline right, that was the, didn't she say it takes 30 hours?
Yeah, 30 hours, that's right.
Right,
yeah.
And she didn't have to sabotage the boat. They could have kept moving towards the shore, and they could have just sat watching each other.
Yeah.
Right, sit watching each other. Right. If nobody has any symptoms before then, hey, we probably none of us have it. we could always, you know, let's see what happens, and we can discuss this further. We've got 30 hours to discuss a solution to this particular problem.
Right.
Not sabotage the whole boat so it can't go anywhere, and we're going to die if none of us are infected. Right.
Okay, yeah.
Well, just for her to think that the creature was going to be able to survive in the middle of Ireland didn't make sense when the creature lives in the water.
It infected very quickly. That's what she was worried about. That I can see because humans have water, and I don't know. I'm not a biologist, so I won't go there, I guess. But
in
my simple mind, I could see that happening and working, but...
No, I get it. I just, you know, how is it getting, like, what's the vector? How is it being transmitted? You know, is it through coughing, sneezing? Here it seems to be through water, right?
Right.
And even through water, right? This is a parasite. This is not a virus or bacterium, sure. So I can't even imagine like sharing a drink with somebody is going to do it.
And their symptoms are huge. Their eyeballs explode. Well,
stand
in front of them.
Or they go blind, or they become hyper aggressive, and
or they start bleeding out all over the place. It's not exactly subtle parasite.
Yeah.
Right, and even with a parasite, you have to build up to a point before it becomes infectious.
Right.
Because if you've got one little tadpole swimming around inside of you, it's. I guess I feel like part of me feels like we're overthinking it.
Yeah. yeah, but it is science fiction.
But part of it is, right. This is not, stupid teenager in the woods being chased by an axe maniac.
It's
something
trying
that
to be intelligent.
Trying to be a smart science fiction, and it is bringing some smart science into this, but then it's just leaving buckets of common sense. To me, feels like it's leaving buckets of common sense out.
Yep.
Right.
I do have to wonder if, again, something we've talked about in past podcasts, where sometimes, it's not a wise idea to withhold information from the audience, because that surprise at the end is not worth them knowing what the fuck is going on.
And what surprise is that?
And in this particular case, maybe it would have been worthwhile for us as the audience to know that they were not where they were supposed to be, so we could we could understand the decision of the captain and some of those decisions, and we would understand why he's not sharing that with the rest of the crew, right? That the rest of the crew doesn't necessarily know that, but he's aware of it, we're aware of it, and so we get that sense of jeopardy, and they don't realize the jeopardy we're in. I think that might work better than just with 20 minutes left to go in the film and go, oh, by the way, nobody knows where the fuck we are.
Yeah, and there's also another thing that was kind of left hanging. I don't know if, it was with, at a certain point after Sierra goes crazy and dies and Gerard is killed by his wife. At his request, Freya actually leaves to go to get help taking the raft when the raft's with her. And we never get an idea if she was killed by the creature or she was actually managing to get help or anything like that.
You get no closure with her, that's for sure.
Right. That's what I was going to ask. Do you guys think she makes it or not? Makes it meaning finds the ships or land so she can...
I know that creature was pretty big.
Well, the problem is too is that the creature that we saw in the beginning was left behind back in its territory. The one they were dealing with right now is the one stuck in the water tank, and only becomes large towards the very end after it chews its way through the hull, Yeah, they just kind of leave it hanging because it felt like the ending is a miss because at the very conclusion, a boat does come to help. So I just picture Freya still floating around the sea trying to make it ashore when Omi's already being carried back to civilization.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I don't know. It was weird how her character just...
Disappeared.
I was shocked that they ended her story arc that way instead.
They could have given us a little closure on her, and I would have been a little happier about that.
Well, I mean, I don't think she's making it.
I don't think so either.
that feels kind of clear to me. She's basically sacrificing herself, even if she's not intentionally sacrificing herself. She's out in the middle of the fucking ocean.
Right.
Right. It's going to be really hard to get her to survive. There are other things in the ocean besides giant glowing jellyfish that can kill you, including the ocean itself.
She may have a flare gun or something. I mean, we don't really know what she has, but
no, there's no hope for her, Phil. There's a sea leprechaun she's got to worry about.
Wait
a minute. Maybe it'll recognize she's a fellow redhead.
That's true.
Fucking gingers.
Yeah.
I mean, not a Canadian ginger, because that's just completely implausible, but...
Right.
But that actually comes back towards... now we're talking about the fate of characters. The twist, the kind of last reveal at the end after... Saban saves Ami because she came from drowning and from the creature's grasp. Well, she ends up being infected herself in an ironic twist. And because she can't
go she has to save the guy that can't swim.
Yeah. Because he had butterfingers and missed a step down the ladder. She ends up getting bitten by one of the tendrils and she ends up being outright infected. And she decides to drown herself by to focal point her way down to the bottom of the ocean towards the creature.
Right. Yeah, that was bizarre.
It was a weird ending.
Well, and didn't he get hurt by the creature too? So
no, it didn't get all the way to his suit.
Right.
I don't know. I think he's infected too.
I think what he had was a dry suit, where she had a wetsuit. Because his was like kind of bigger and baggier, and
yeah,
dry suits
bigger.
Are impermeable, so I think it would be harder for him to get infected.
Right, and he mentioned that he got bit. Right,
and don't get me wrong, if we find out in Sea Fever 2, Sea Harder, if we find out in that he's infected, I wouldn't be shocked, but... Right. You know, I'm guessing at this moment probably not.
Right,
he should have been because he couldn't swim and he fell.
Well, he should have been allowed to survive. I mean, that should have been her saying, "You know, I'm sorry, I'm in the boat. I'm going, motherfucker.
I'm going home now.
Screw you guys. Go home."
Right.
If you learn to swim, your baby'd have a daddy right now.
Well, what happened was he came up.
What kind of a dumbass works on a boat that doesn't learn to swim?
Exactly.
He came up, and she was about to get him onto the boat, but then the tendrils pulled him down. In the moment the tendrils pulled him down, I would have just let him go, because I would have figured that he got bit.
He's bit. Yeah. Done. We know what goes now.
Yeah,
so, you know, it becomes so convenient that just at that very moment, a fucking boat's already approaching them.
Well, that was intentional, because they that's true. I mean, they set the boat on fire as a beacon, but still... The randomness that a boat was going to be close by is still very rare. So that's a fair point, too.
Yeah, in this huge area where there's supposed to be no fishing going on.
Right. Yeah, that's true, because they're still in that area, I thought.
Yeah, and not enough time had passed to suggest that Freyr had gotten help.
Right. Oh, yeah, well, that's what unless Freyr was on the boat. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no way. No, it was only like
because then they should have ended it that way if she was her on the bow or something.
Yeah. You know, it could have been more ambiguous, like, you know, just Ami floating there weeping for Saban and just fade to black. Leave it ambiguous.
What happens if the boat was pirates? That would be good.
Yeah, he ends up in a boat with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, you know, that would be good. Yeah, so anyway. Any final thoughts or anything else that you were going to bring up that we didn't bring up? Anybody? Anyone? All right.
The electrocuting of the boat.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little more, sure.
Yeah, I am just curious, because that is, again, physics is not my field. So I'm just curious how well that would actually work.
Yeah, right.
Did that happen to strike anyone as particularly plausible or implausible?
I can't. I mean,
a large part of the boat was wood, right down below. That's how it got through the hull. So I don't know. It didn't seem.
And you need a hell of a current to get across almost all the boat.
Yeah. Would the boat even have enough power to do that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a little iffy to me. It seemed like a desperation move for sure.
You know, see, that's an area where I'm iffy, but I definitely would want to hold my iffiness until I heard from somebody else.
Yeah,
somebody who might know this a little bit better than I do.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. I didn't really have an opinion because I had no idea. Yeah. All right, so we've been recording for about 2 hours, so I guess we'll probably wrap it up, so we'll give our final thoughts. But before we do give our final thoughts, Mike, me and you are doing another podcast with Eric Weekly.
Assuming Eric is feeling better and the NFL draft is over, then next Monday we will be covering the 7th episode of the HBO TV series Westworld, third season, which did just get renewed for a fourth, which I'm sure will make Eric very happy because it means that podcast gets to continue another year. We're covering that. That's going to be episode 7 out of an 8-episode season, so that's almost over. And then when that's done, we're going to come back and be watching, I think it was Forbidden Planet for Cinema a la Carte.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And Barrett, me, you, and Abe, and Kevin Letts are doing an episode later this month.
So our topic for that date, whichever one it is, will be Lovecraftian story titled Whisper in the Dark. If you would like to check out other episode of the Lovecraft story or the two Stephen King novels we had covered prior to that, those episodes are up right now on the Discussions main page.
Yep, that's right. All right, so let's give our final thoughts on this film here. So why don't we start with you, Abe?
So this movie has some really good stuff in it. It's well shot. The cast really gives it their all from their performances. And the basic concept of the creature is pretty cool, even though it has a lot of echoes to things that had already been created from other films. There's a lot that you can really compare, or that are nearly impossible not to compare to other films like The Thing or Alien. And that's a tall order to say it's anywhere close to that level of those films or even beats it. This film has some inconsistencies with its rules on the creature and the infection. There's some really questionable story decisions and from the characters and the script. It's not a terrible film, but it's, in my opinion, rather flawed. You can honestly, like I said before, over last week's episode, in terms of the subgenre, you could do better in terms of finding sea creature films. But you could really easily do far worse. But if you're interested, it's a decent watch, and so go check it out if you feel like it.
All right, very good. Barrett?
I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was a little derivative. But I thought the acting was spectacular, and I thought the filming was really well done. As Abe said, you know, there are better sea creature movies out there. But, while I watched this, I was not bored. I enjoyed myself. There's just a few flaws in how it's implemented in the scripting. If that had been a little better, I think I would like the movie a lot better. But it's definitely worth watching, and it's not boring. It's, fairly fun to watch. So that's all I've got.
All right, very well. I'm right there with you guys. I felt everything about the film was entertaining, pretty solid. Though the script had some issues, which was probably the thing that doesn't make it a top film. And just a good fun film to watch. I mean, it's we kind of did a lot of nitpicking or pointing out a lot of flaws in the movie, but that shouldn't make you dislike it because it's still a good film. I mean, it's like Mike said, if we were comparing it to films like Life or something like that, it's a solid film like Life was, because we all, when we watched that on Dark Discussions, we all thought that was a pretty decent film, if not a great film.
And we definitely picked on that one too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, a lot of times we're picking on it is, again, it's derivative of films like Alien and The Thing and Dead Calm and on, which are all better films than this film here. And because it cribs from them so much, obviously it's very difficult not to compare it to those films. So, it is what it is. But
Generally, it was still a good thumbs up film for me. I mean, I enjoyed it, even with all these issues that we discussed. Mike?
Yeah, I think it's a flawed film. It's a mediocre film, but it's not a bad film. It's if you're stuck at home and looking for something to do for 90 minutes, it's not a bad one to pick. I'm not sure I could encourage it enough for somebody to rent, but if and when it shows up on Amazon Prime, on Netflix, on whatever streaming channel eventually ends up carrying it, and you could catch it without paying for it, you know, I tried. By the way, Abe, you probably remember, what was the name of that film, Harbinger Down?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, very much like that.
It's
a practical creature film, yeah.
Yeah, where it was a film that had some really neat effects or practical creature, and every other part of the film sucked. So let me compare this to Harbinger Down and say this is a much better film than Harbinger Down was.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because we've been comparing it to the stuff that, justifiably, you know, they made it, they made the film. They had to know the films that we were going to compare it to that probably inspired it. I think the script should have been smarter, and if the script had been as smart as it was at pretenses of being, or if they had gone the opposite way and just been kind of, you know, dumb and goofy, like something like Deep Rising, then I wouldn't have quite the same number of issues with it. But it's not a bad film. I certainly would recommend giving it a shot if you like sea creature films.
All right, very good.
So once again, this is Sea Fever. Film for 2020,
international produced film. It's getting decent reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, a little buzz from horror fans. Obviously, you know, make sure you have keep your expectations in check. But generally, as all of us said, mediocre or great film. All in all, it was entertaining, no matter where you fall on the curve. So, I guess with all that stated, Mike, why don't you lead us out?
Oh, well, thank you for once again listening to the Dark Discussions podcast. We ask you to come back again next week when we will be discussing something else. If you leave